Chapter 4. Basic Ethics. Many organizations overcomplicate the concept of ethics. Discussions around what is ethical and what is unethical don't have to involve philosophical debate and references to Aristotle and Plato. In many cases, ethics is simply doing what you know to be the right thing, the fair thing, or the appropriate thing. However, that doesn't mean that being ethical is obvious or easy. Doing the right thing may be at odds with taking the most popular route or course of action, especially when the right thing is uncomfortable or controversial. Of course, more often than not, it's human nature for people to make decisions based on what's popular as opposed to what's right. Frequently, though not always, admittedly, they are two different things. For example, giving direct, honest feedback to people is the right thing to do, the ethical thing, because in providing feedback about their performance, you're informing your employees about the likelihood of continued employment at your company or the odds of getting that promotion they've been eyeing. You're helping them see the reality of their situation rather than taking the easy route and saying everything they want to hear, even if it's not true. However, most people prefer to avoid confrontation or conflict and are much more comfortable providing only positive feedback. They want to be respected and liked by the people who work for them, so they steer clear of anything that could be construed as negative. And that's neither helpful nor honest, and can lead employees to believe they are doing a much better job than they really are. If you're more worried about whether the people who work for you like you than you are about whether they understand what they need to do to improve at their job, then you're doing them a disservice. You're not helping them improve. You're not helping them become disciplined. Honesty. Another aspect of ethical behavior is honesty. You're being unethical if you don't provide answers that are direct and true, and if instead you choose to leave important facts out. This applies to issues big and small. Yet often, being honest can be difficult and even awkward. I remember one time when we had a supervisory position open in one of our distribution centers, and one of our experienced employees applied for it but didn't get it. What upset her more than not being given the promotion, however, was the fact that a newer employee had. So she went to her boss to express her opinion that she should have gotten it, and he didn't agree with her. So she went to his boss, who also didn't agree with her, on up the chain until she landed in my office. Although I agreed with the decision that had been made, I also wanted her to understand the rationale, so that she would keep giving her best and remain in the running for a promotion at some point in the future. "Are you a Cincinnati Reds fan?" I asked her. "Yes," she answered. "Well, if you were the manager of the Reds, and you thought you had a better chance of winning by putting in a young new shortstop, Barry Larkin, in the lineup than our regular shortstop, Dave Concepcion, whom would you play?" I asked her. "Well, I'd put Barry Larkin in as shortstop," she said. "Well, that's what your boss has decided to do. He's not saying you're bad or you're not qualified for the job. All he's saying with this decision is that there is someone else who he thinks today is more qualified for the job," I explained. "And now you have a decision to make. Either you can sulk about this and be upset, or you can accept it and keep doing your best work, and maybe when another supervisory position opens up, you'll be the best person for the job then." Fortunately, she accepted the decision and continued to do a great job, and 4 months later, when another supervisory opening occurred, she got it. But it would have been unfair not to be completely open and honest about what had happened and about her chances of landing a promotion in the future. At Cintas, we assured partners that being upfront and honest at work was critical. It was likely you wouldn't be let go if you admitted your mistake or poor judgment right away, rather than lie about it or try to cover it up so that no one found out. If there is bad news, deliver it and deal with the consequences. That's the ethical approach. Separating business and personal affairs. In some cases, unethical behavior emerges because a senior leader has let their personal and business lives intersect. It's hard to remain ethical if your personal life is influencing decisions you make on behalf of your company. Remember the CEO of Tyco, who spent $100 million of the company's money on art to furnish its headquarters? The problem there was that he did not separate business from personal matters. He liked being surrounded by beautiful art, so he had his employer pay for expensive artwork to line the company's halls. Was it in the company's best interest? Probably not. Would another C-suite executive have made the same decision if put in the same situation? Probably not. You should not allow your personal feelings about something to cloud your decision-making. Decisions about the best interests of your organization should be clear. That's easier when you can put aside your own personal preferences and relationships in order to make them. I'll admit that I was likely more concerned about this issue than my colleagues, to the point that if I brought home a legal pad because I needed a notepad, I would pay the company for it. I realize that's likely an extreme example, and Dick Farmer disagreed with me, telling me, "Bob, you work 80 hours a week. Why should you pay for a legal pad?" My response was, "But Dick, where do you draw the line? If it's okay to take a legal pad, is it okay to take a chair? A desk? A computer? Where do you draw the line?" I draw the line at zero, at taking absolutely nothing from the company home for my personal use. Dick thought I was nuts for being such a stickler, but I hope you see my point. If it's okay to take a legal pad home one day, can I make a habit of it? Can I take all the supplies my kids need for school? Can I photocopy materials for my volunteer role? When is it acceptable and when is it not? If different people would draw the line at different actions, it's safer to prohibit everyone from taking company property home for personal use. Given my concern with accounting for a single legal pad, you would be right if you guessed that Cintas was a stickler about complying with all governmental laws and regulations. Sure, there were some regulations I personally didn't like and didn't agree with. Some I even thought were downright ridiculous, but they were laws, and laws are meant to be followed. There was never any question about that. Laws aren't optional, we would explain to our partners. If there is a law or regulation stating that you should do something a certain way, you do it that way. No exceptions. You don't look for ways to get around it, or mislead people, or lie about it. That was true whether a law had to do with standard accounting practices, hiring regulations, or any other law. On the flip side, we also told everyone in the company that no partner should ever compromise their personal ethics or standards. It didn't matter what the company's standards were if they were in conflict with someone's own personal ethics. We never expected a partner to do something that went against their own belief system. You may be crystal clear about your own ethical boundaries, but others may have boundaries that are wider or more restrictive than yours, meaning a situation or behavior can be viewed as perfectly ethical to one individual and not at all ethical to another. Let me give you an example. Let's say you're a sales representative, and you've just made a presentation to the purchasing manager at a potential customer that you'd really like to win as a new customer. It went great, and you feel like they were just about to ask, "How do we get started? Can we sign a contract?" When they get a message from their boss that calls them away from their office briefly. You're left in their office alone, on the other side of their desk. A few minutes go by, and you start looking out the window, then around the office, and your eyes happen to land on papers on your prospect's desk. You realize that you're looking at your competitor's proposal lying open on the purchasing agent's desk, with their quoted prices in plain view. Do you look at it? Or do you look away? When I've shared this scenario in business classes and asked students to raise their hand if they would look, I guess that about half of the class raised their hands. As for the justification, I'd hear, "They left the page open. She wouldn't have done that if she was concerned about my seeing it." Or maybe, It's not a big deal. It's not hurting anybody if I take a quick look. The other half of the class saw the situation differently, explaining something to the effect of, "No, I couldn't do it. I'd be gaining an unfair advantage. It wouldn't be right." There are many situations where two people can look at the same set of circumstances and view them completely differently. That doesn't mean that one person is right and the other person is wrong, only that we can have different perspectives. To help people know what the right decision is for them, I tell them to go with their gut. What is your gut telling you? How do you feel about it? I'd propose as one measure of what would be considered acceptable or unacceptable. Your gut reaction, in many cases, reflects your personal belief system and morals. In turn, that determines what you should do, what is right for you. Setting boundaries. In addition to using a visceral gut check regarding ethical behavior, at Cintas we used a list of 6 questions to help partners determine for themselves what they were comfortable with. These questions included: Is it legal? Will I be violating a company policy? Does what I am about to do jeopardize anyone's safety? How will it make me feel about myself? How would I feel if my decision was published in tomorrow's newspaper? How would I feel if my family knew about it? Although certainly not an exhaustive list, these are good starting points for deciding what behavior is acceptable to you and what is not. Of course, employers may have their own questions regarding acceptable behavior that you may want to check on too. Is it legal? This should be a fairly easy question to answer. And if you don't know the answer, you should be able to learn whether certain behavior is legal with a search of state law databases, a visit to your human resources department, or better yet, a quick call to your attorney. In most cases, you already know whether something is legal. And if you're involved in a situation that potentially falls into some gray area, you probably still know the answer. If you're trying to find a loophole to justify your actions, that's probably a sign that what you're considering is, in fact, unethical. Will I be violating a company policy? Even if you're not violating a state or federal law, there may be an official company policy about the situation you find yourself in. And if you're doing something contrary to a company policy, such as charging personal expenses to your business credit card, for example, you shouldn't be. It's unethical. Does what I am about to do jeopardize anyone's safety? At Cintas, we don't want anyone in the company to ever take any action that would potentially hurt someone or cause someone to have an accident. That means pranks that could cause physical harm are out of the question. So if the answer is ever yes to putting someone's safety in jeopardy, at Cintas, we would say that the action shouldn't be taken. It's not ethical. How will it make me feel about myself? This is the gut check. It's that sensation deep down inside. Maybe you feel it as tension in your stomach, or a tightening of your shoulders, or something that feels off somewhere on your body. That's a reflex. It's your subconscious warning that what you're considering may not be the best decision. So when you feel uneasy, stop and ask yourself, "Am I doing the right thing?" Your gut may be telling you that what you're contemplating isn't the right choice. How would I feel if my decision was published in tomorrow's newspaper? Even if the decision you're about to make isn't going to become public knowledge, think about how you'd feel if it did. You pick up tomorrow morning's paper, and there on the front page in big, bold print is your recent decision. Are you proud of that headline? Does it make you feel good? Or are you embarrassed? Do you want to hide? Then you know what you need to do. How would I feel if my family knew about it? But even if the press didn't get a hold of your latest decision or behavior, what if your family knew? How would you feel about that decision then? Would you have some explaining to do? Would they be proud of you? When you encounter a situation where your decision is unclear, Run through these 6 questions to see where you end up. Let your conscience be your guide. Yes, you should consider what your boss is asking you to do and what your company expects you to do, but ultimately, you should do what your personal compass tells you is the right thing for you to do. If that situation occurs, the first step is to talk to your boss about it. Explain the situation and your perspective. Ask for their support and try to come with a solution in hand rather than just dropping a problem in their lap. That dialogue is so important, and in some cases, once you discuss it, your opinion about the situation may change. You may decide that the explanation your boss has given you alters your opinion and your feelings about whatever you've been asked to do. In the unlikely event that your boss won't support you, take your issue to your boss's boss. At Cintas, you could write a hotline message about it to make sure it reached senior management. Maybe your organization has a similar communication system. But never do anything that violates your own personal value system. Making things right. Sometimes you'll need to consider what to do going forward, and sometimes you'll come across a situation where something has already happened, and now you need to decide what, if anything, to do about it. That happened at Cintas years ago, shortly after we began doing business with Firestone's retail tire locations. They had been our customer for about 9 months when one of our partners walked into my office and told me, "Bob, we've got a problem." The problem, as it was explained to me, was that although we normally charge a small fee when a new employee is being put in uniform to cover the cost of putting new uniforms together, our contract with Firestone had us take that fee out. We built the cost of that prep work into the price. Yet for the past 9 months, we had been charging the Southeast region of Firestone a makeup charge for each new uniform. The Firestone Southeast regional manager there had discovered our error and reported it to us. After we started investigating, we learned that some of our locations had been charging this fee to Firestone in their region, and other locations knew about the contract and had taken that fee out. Only the Southeast region knew about the error, however. "How much money are we talking about?" I asked him. "Well, about $9,000 for the Southeast region," he told me. "And how many regions does Firestone have?" I asked. "Around 14 regions," he said. "Has anyone checked yet to see how widespread this overcharging is?" I wondered. "Yes, we did," he said. "In the first 9 months of our contract, we overcharged Firestone $150,000. So the question was then, what should we do in this situation? Do we refund the Southeast region $9,000 and hope the other regions don't find out about the error? Some people might. But not Cintas. We had to own up to our mistake. Immediately. I picked up the phone and called the president of Firestone. I apologized for our mistake, which had caused us to inadvertently overcharge them, and asked whether he preferred a check for $150,000 or a credit against future purchases. Now, as it turns out, the head of Firestone's Southeast region eventually became president of all the company's retail locations. Over the next few years, if he told me once, he told me 15 times how that decision to refund the total amount we had overcharged, even for regions Firestone was unaware of, caused him to be more loyal to Cintas than any other supplier. Although admitting our error and apologizing caught the attention of management at Firestone, in a good way, we would have returned the money whether it helped us or not. It was just the right thing to do, we felt. That was a clear mistake we needed to fix. But other situations aren't quite as cut and dried. Eliminating conflicts of interest. And sometimes it's possible to turn a conflict into a business opportunity. Like the time I was invited by our largest fabric supplier to play Augusta National Golf Course. If you're a golfer, you know what a special opportunity playing golf at Augusta National is, maybe even once in a lifetime. Augusta National Golf Club, where the PGA Masters is played, is hallowed ground. Just an amazing golf course. However, Cintas's policy about such invitations was that they weren't permitted. Suppliers couldn't pay for extravagant events or meals. A $20 or $25 burger and fries? Sure, but beyond that, it was not allowed. The reasoning behind the prohibition was that expensive events could possibly cause you to lose your objectivity in dealing with a supplier, to forge loyalties that would result in Cintas not getting the best deal possible. Despite my strong desire to play Augusta National, I told our supplier that I had to decline due to Cintas's policy. It's just far beyond what we would allow a supplier to do for us, I explained, though I would love to say yes and really appreciate the offer. I hung up the phone and went to tell my boss about the amazing invitation I had just received.
Oh my gosh, he said, maybe we should make an exception here.
Dick was also an avid golfer and understood what it would mean to me to play the famed course.
No, I told him. I appreciate it, but we can't do that.
How can I expect the people who work for me to follow the policy if I don't follow it? I have to decline. But Dick really wanted me to have that opportunity, so we kept brainstorming ways that wouldn't put Cintas at a disadvantage in negotiating with the supplier, a way that the trip could benefit Cintas. Finally, as we discussed the situation, we came up with an idea. Why don't you call the supplier back and tell him you can come on one condition, if you can bring a customer, Dick suggested. The opportunity to endear a customer to us, to give them the opportunity to play Augusta National, would be monumental. So I called him back about bringing a guest, and he told me, sure, that's no problem at all. The next call I made was to the vice president of purchasing at Dow Chemical. It was probably one of the funniest conversations I've ever had. Are you available to play golf with me the first week of December? I asked him. Oh, Bob, I'd love to, but there's no way. It's just a busy time of year. We're working on year-end stuff, wrapping up the year, and I have to finalize my budget for next year. I'm just buried. Just too much work to get away then. But thanks so much for inviting me. Maybe next year, he told me. We're going to play Augusta National, I told him. Without missing a beat, he asked, when do you want me to come? The round of golf gave me a unique opportunity to impress a customer and get to know the decision maker better, but that's the only way I felt comfortable going.
Only when I knew that Cintas would benefit from the invitation.
On another occasion, I happened to find out in passing that my younger brother, who was in the IT business,
had sold some products to Cintas. I hadn't known about it,
wasn't involved at all in the purchasing process, and had no influence whatsoever, but I wanted to avoid any suggestion of impropriety if anyone discovered that a family member had a contract with Cintas. I immediately went to Dick's office to alert him. Dick, I looked into this as soon as I learned about it. I want you to know about it too, to know that the decision was made without any input from me, and it appears to be the best decision for the company, but I didn't want there to be any question about my involvement because there was none, I told him.
Because I was upfront about it and made him aware of it as soon as I had learned about my brother's business having Cintas as a customer, it wasn't an issue.
The key with ethics is becoming familiar with your organization's rules, regulations, and expectations, and then lining them up with your own personal value system to be sure they're aligned. If they're not aligned, you should discuss the discrepancies with your supervisor to develop a plan for how to respond if you're asked to do something you're not comfortable doing. At its core, ethics is behaving in a way that is in sync with your own personal value system, always, and understanding what your employer's value system is, so that you can recognize where the line between ethical behavior and unethical behavior is drawn. Chapter Summary. Choosing to do the right thing often turns out to be the ethical course of action. Being honest, even when it's uncomfortable, is one aspect of ethical behavior. Avoiding confrontation or conflict by lying is, at its core, unethical. It's easier to make decisions in the best interest of your employer when you can separate business from personal affairs. Remove your personal preferences and relationships from the equation when making decisions
regarding the best interests of your organization. Cintas had 6 questions we used as a guide for decision-making to confirm that the choices we were making were truly the right ones for us.
Sometimes your employer may expect you to take an action that doesn't match your own personal ethics. It's important to speak up about where you draw the line as far as your own beliefs and standards.